We are very pleased to continue our study in the 31st Psalm. In this Psalm, David is describing how God has given him deliverance from his troubles. In verse 5, he says, "Into thine hand I commit my spirit. Thou hast redeemed me, O Lord God of truth. I have hated them that regard lying vanities, but I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and rejoice in thy mercy, for thou hast considered my trouble. Thou hast known my soul in adversities, and hast not shut me up into the hand of the enemy. Thou hast set my feet in a large room," showing that God had been most liberal in attending to his problems, in being aware of his situation, in considering his trouble. But now in the 9th verse, he begins to elaborate more upon his problems. He calls upon God to have mercy upon him. He says, "Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am in trouble." And we're going to see, beginning with the 9th verse, that he is going to elaborate more upon his troubles, what was the cause of them and what was the effect of them. And he is doing this in order to get the attention of God to give him relief from his problems. So, "I have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am in trouble." And he further says, "Mine eye is consumed with grief, yea, my soul in my belly," showing here that his entire being now has this great shadow cast over it because of his trouble, because of his difficulties. For he says in verse 10, "My life is spent with grief," that is, my life is consumed, it's wasted, "and my years with sighing. My strength faileth because of mine iniquity, and my bones are consumed," showing that every part of his being is affected. His soul, his spiritual side, his belly, his innermost self, his mental side, and then the physical part of him, the eye, the bones. These things are all used. My years with sighing. My life is spent with grief. So every part of him is affected by this grief. And he tells us in that 10th verse, it is because of mine iniquity. That is, these problems have come on because of his iniquity. Now, David does not name a specific sin. If I had to guess at one sin of David that he would be talking about here that caused all of this tremendous problem, it'd be the sin of his adultery with Bathsheba and also the death of Uriah. The matter of Uriah. And after he committed this sin, David's life began to fall apart. He began to have many, many problems. Not only did the baby that was born as a result of his union with Bathsheba die, he lost that baby. It would grieve David very greatly. But he had some very terrible things happen in his household. He had one son that raped one of his daughters. He had a son to kill another son. He had one son, Absalom, to rebel against him and to run him out of the capital and to have a civil war in the nation before David finally regained his throne back. Many, many problems here. And they could be dated back to that sin with Bathsheba in the matter of Uriah. But he doesn't say that that's the problem here. He says it's because of my iniquity. He leaves the matter open. He leaves the matter to not be some specific sin. And so he may be talking about his general sinful nature just due to the fact that he is a human being, due to the fact that he is a descendant of Adam, that he is a participant in the fall of man from the Garden of Eden. And so the fact that no specific sin is named here really gives us great latitude as we apply this to ourselves, because we can say the same things that David is saying because of our iniquity. We then have to go through troubles, griefs, trials because of our iniquity. Surely there's not going to be this kind of suffering in heaven. There's not going to be this kind of trouble in the life after this one. We're looking forward to a life in which there be no tears, no grief, no sighing. But not so in this life. We have grief, we have sighing, as David says here, and it's because of mine iniquity. So let us realize the great and grave nature of sin, of iniquity. What kind of problems we have because of it. What kind of great difficulties we get ourselves into because of it. A sin has consequence. And you may commit a sin and you may get forgiveness, but it's still there is a consequence of that sin. And that's what David is praying for here is to have mercy upon me for I'm in trouble. To not make me go through all of this consequence. He wants God to shortcut the matter. And he's praying for God to do this so that he doesn't have to suffer all of the things that his sins require that he suffer. Beginning in verse 11, he gives a much deeper and broader explanation of what his true position was during this time of suffering. He says, I was a reproach among all mine enemies, but especially among my neighbors. Now, to be a reproach means that they hold you in contempt. They blame you. They deride you. You may freely be accused of being at fault. It's a condition in which you are looked down upon by others. So I was reproached, he says, among all mine enemies. The enemies that he had. Those that were wanting him to have some bad thing happen. Those that were trying to defeat him or overcome him. They looked upon him as being much of an inferior now. He was someone that they looked down upon. They didn't have any respect for him. But he says, especially among my neighbors. Not only happened to him from his enemies, but his neighbors also had the same feeling. And this is probably the very time in which Saul had such a hatred, such an enmity toward David, that anyone who even showed any kind of friendship to David then was considered to be an enemy of Saul and was in danger of losing his life, maybe, just like David was in danger of losing his. So this condition, this punishment that he was having, this time of grief and trouble that he was going through, put him in such a condition that he then was held in contempt by all who observed him, by his enemies and also by his neighbors. And because of this great power of Saul, it was a reasonable thing for people to treat David this way, because they saw what happened to Ahimelech, the priest, who had assisted David, given him something to eat, how that he was slaughtered and the priest with him. To just say something nice about David was automatically to put you in a condition of being suspect with the king. Now, I don't mean to say that it was right for people to treat David this way, that it was proper, but because of the great pressure put on by the government, put on by the officials of the land, then it was reasonable to see that people would react this way. So his enemies treated him this way, but especially among my neighbors, he said. Then he says, and a fear to mine acquaintance. They that did see me without fled from me. His acquaintance, anyone who knew him, was afraid to be around him. He was afraid to give him any kind of support or comfort, afraid even to be seen with him. They that did see me without fled from me. That is, when I left my home and went out among the people, they would flee from me. They would not want to have anything to do with me. I was ostracized from any kind of companionship or association. And this, of course, may not have been a just thing to have happened to David, but it did happen. And we can see maybe today some of the similar things happening to us. Not that we have it to this same degree that David had it, but we may be ostracized from our friends. We may have those to think ill of us when they shouldn't. They may say things about us that are not justified to be said because they've been misled, or maybe they've had pressure put on them by our enemies to feel a certain way about us. And so there are many who have suffered similar things to what David is describing here unjustly, simply because they're going through a time of trouble. This has happened many times to a person on a job. Several of his fellow workers get it in for him. They start making unkind remarks about him. They start making jokes about him, laughing at him. And it's most difficult to overcome a situation like that. And so we can begin to see how David really felt here. David felt like that he was a person that was just absolutely cut off from all help. His friends, his associates, they were afraid to be with him. They fled from him, and they accused him of being actually in the wrong, that he was a reproach among all of them. In verse 12, he further describes this. He says, I am forgotten as a dead man out of mind. He's just like a person who had died now. Of course, most people, when they die, there is a short remembrance made of them, But after a few years, their memory begins to become more and more dim, so that many people now do not even know them, have never even heard of them, and they're not discussed. You may see a tombstone with someone's name on it who died 50 years ago, and you don't know anything about them. They're forgotten. And David says that's the way he had become. He says, I'm forgotten as a dead man out of mind. When a few years go by, most people who die simply get out of the mind of those who are still alive. They're forgotten. And other events and memories and people take their place, and it's just as though they never even lived after a few years. Well, that's what David said his situation was. I'm just like a dead man who's forgotten. He further says, I'm like a broken vessel. Now, a broken vessel, and this is referring to a pottery vessel, is usually cast aside, thrown into the junk heap. It's not saved or highly prized or regarded as some valuable or useful object, because once it's broken, then it ceases to be able to carry out its original purpose, and so it's cast aside. David says, I'm like that. I'm like a broken vessel. And he further says in verse 13, for I have heard the slander of many. Now, this slander that was given to him was actually false reports. They were telling lies about him. They were degrading him in a way that he wasn't justified. He hadn't really committed the wrongs that they were accusing him of. And so he was being slandered. So now we see many of the things that have happened to him. He was a reproach among his enemies and his neighbors. He was a fear to his acquaintance. And he was like a forgotten man, like a dead man, and like a broken vessel. And now he says, for I've heard the slander of many. He had heard what they were saying about him. And it wasn't really true. But nevertheless, they were saying it. They were accusing him of it. And he says, fear was on every side. He's talking about his fear. He was afraid now on every side. He didn't know which way to turn. We know there were times in which he even had to leave the nation of Israel. He had to go out of the country. There were other times which he had to hide in the caves down in the wilderness areas. Fear was on every side. Here he was in a true condition of distress and trouble. False things being said about him. People afraid to even talk to him or have any acquaintance or give any friendship to him. No one would give him any aid. Fear on every side. He further says, while they took counsel together against me, they devised to take away my life. Here they were plotting and planning ways to kill him. At one time, David referred to the fact that death was just around the corner. Death was maybe at his next step. The whole nation now seemed to be turned against him. Here was a man who was anointed to be king of Israel. He was supposed to be king, but yet he finds himself a fugitive, running for his life, not able to even show his face in many places of his own nation, simply because he was now accused of being a person that was bad or wrong. And he'd heard the slander, and this caused fear on every side. They were taking counsel. They were devising to take away his life. So he was really in a deep state of distress. And what a blessing it is for us that we can take this condition of David and derive strength and courage and sustenance from it. It matters not how much trouble we're in, how low and how deep our distress may be. We can relate to David. If we know that we're going to die, if we know that we're going to be put to death by our enemies, then we're simply in a condition that David was in here. We can relate to this. We can do what David did for comfort, for relief. We can do what David did for service to God. And so this can be a very good example for us. Very few of us have a distress as deep and all-reaching as this distress of David's was. Very few of us have our lives really in danger day after day after day for a period of years like David did. But we can use this example. And even if we were in as great a problem or distress as he was in, we still can use David's example. So it's wonderful then that we do have this recorded for our benefit, for our learning, for us to lean upon and to learn about as we then encounter our day-by-day problems. They divide to take away my life. Now, beginning in the 14th verse, he tells what he did during this time. What did David do? Did he give up in despair? Did he turn to wickedness? Did he decide he just wasn't going to be an Israelite any longer and he was going to take on the religion and the ways of other nations? He was just going to be a person that could no longer go back to his homeland? What did he do during this time? He says in verse 14, "But I trusted in thee, O Lord." Now that's the action that all of us should take. He trusted in the Lord. He put his confidence. He placed his life, his destiny in the hands of God. "I trusted in thee, O Lord." Now this means, first of all, that he did not use any means that are contrary to the will of God to try to extricate himself from these difficulties. He didn't take up the ways of the world that would have been conflicting with the ways of God. He trusted in the Lord. He maintained his fidelity to God. He maintained his relationship with God. He continued to carry out the commands of God. "I trusted in thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my God." No other God did he take. He didn't turn to any other kind of spiritual source to give him help, to give him relief. "Thou art my God." Now, of course, this is the very utmost and good advice for any person, regardless of what your condition is. Or even if you think you're not in a state of distress, or if you think that you're in the deepest and most dire of circumstances. If you'd been condemned to die and were just simply waiting for the time of your execution, here again, this is the appropriate course to take. "I trusted in thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my God." To really and truly feel and act as though this is your God. You trust in this God and you're going to obey. You're going to be his servant. You're going to only use the methods that God has provided for you to use as you encounter these problems in this life. You know, so many times, persons get into a little bit of a problem and they immediately leave the principles of God. They go into the principles of the world to try to get themselves out of their difficulties. They may lie or cheat or steal. They may use improper language. They may say things that they shouldn't say. Many, many things that happen here, and we find ourselves then not really trusting in the Lord, but we're now fighting the way that the devil fights. We're now using the methods of the world. And when we do that, we cannot say, "Thou art my God," like David said here, because we have left the principles of God. So that's the first thing that we see that David did. "I trusted in thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my God." And this is very good advice for any of us. Let us remember, whatever our problems, let's trust in the Lord. Let's say, "Thou art my God." Let's say it, let's mean it, let's act as though we mean it. Let's live as though we mean those very words. In verse 15, David elaborates upon why he has this great trust in God, why he can have this great confidence in God. He says, "My times are in thy hand." Now, whatever happens to us, if we are the followers of God, if we are truly his children, then our times are in his hand. That is, God controls, he governs, he regulates what happens to us. He's going to determine whether or not we die at an early age or live to be a ripe old age. He's going to determine what happens to us when we're young or middle-aged or elderly. It doesn't matter. Our times are in his hand. No one can overrule God. No one can come along and force God to do something that he doesn't want to have happen to us. That's just not going to be that way. If we're faithful to God, then our times are in the hand of God. We're not left to chance. We're not left to just the whims of mankind. So it matters not that the whole nation is turned against him. It matters not that he has no friends or that his friends are behaving now like his enemies do. It matters not that they're plotting together to take away his life. My times are in thy hand, he says. You have control over me. You control my times. No one else does. No one else tells what my times are going to be. But you, God, you do this. And so I have this reason then to feel a lot of trust and confidence in thee. You're my God. My times are in thy hand. And so he asked, God, deliver me from the hand of mine enemies and from them that persecute me. They can't do anything unless you allow it to happen. You can prevent it. You can deliver me. You can give me the freedom from these great problems. Deliver me from the hand of mine enemies and then that persecute me. So David freely asked God to come to his assistance, to come to his aid, because God has the power to do this, and David realizes this. David knows this. Deliver me from the hand of mine enemies. God has the power. God has the control. And if we can just make ourselves believe that, if we can believe that God has control over our times, if we can really know that our times are in his hand, that he is the one who can determine what's going to happen to us in this life, then we can have great confidence in God, we can trust in God, and we can freely say, as David said, Thou art my God. And this is one of the reasons that it's so important for us to study and know about God. Because the more we know about God, the more then we can feel a sense of confidence and trust in God. The more we can say and really act and feel, I trusted in Thee, O Lord. And just to know that He is in control, that He can determine our destiny, that our times are in His hand, then this is a great source of comfort and consolation. This is a reason why then that we truly do trust in Him and truly will say, Thou art my God, and will be faithful unto God unto the very end. And here we have a good example of how inspiring and how very practical these lessons in Psalms are for us, for we can take them and apply them to our lives. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.